Welcome to the conference room with this week's guest, Daphna Horowitz.
Feedback is a gift because there are a lot of things we can't see in ourselves. And when someone takes the time to have that courageous conversation with you about something that they're seeing about you that you might not be aware of.
Welcome to The Conference Room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to The Conference Room. Good afternoon and welcome to The Conference Room. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Daphna Horowitz. Daphna is
Hello.
I can see what kind of podcast this one's going to be. Daphna is a sought-after CEO coach. She's an International Coaching Federation certified, master certified coach and trusted advisor, working with clients around the globe to create extraordinary businesses and build future leaders. While she was a director at Alexander Forbes, one of South Africa's leading actuary firms, she learned the importance of developing a leadership mindset that is necessary to take you from being a top performer to an extraordinary leader. She is the author of 2 best-selling books, Courage to Lead and Weekly Habits for Extraordinary Leaders, and is the host of her own 5-star rated podcast, Leadership Live, and a frequent contributor to various publications, including Forbes. And I'm delighted to say that we dragged her kicking and screaming here into the conference room. And I'm delighted to say that she joins me now. Daphna Horowitz, good afternoon and welcome to the conference room.
Hello, Simon. Really excited to be here. Thank you, Simon.
Great stuff. So,
Warm welcome. That's just awesome.
Great stuff. So every hero has an origin story and you are the hero of our story. So tell me, how did you get from starting out to becoming an actuary, then a director at Alexander Forbes, and then making the break to become a CEO coach?
Yeah, it's a good story because I started along the path, I think as many people do, wanting to, you know, being ambitious, being driven, being a top performer, achiever, high achiever myself. And I thought that I had my career path mapped out in front of me. I was going to qualify as an actuary, which is quite a challenging process in itself, work my way up the corporate ladder, and really have this amazing career as an actuary in some big organization. And in fact, when I landed that job, I was headhunted for the job at Alexander Forbes and was offered a directorship. It was really a dream come true for me. I was 23 years old, and really it was an organization that I had my eye on. I was offered a really senior position, and everything seemed to be going great. But at some point, I realized that there was a gap for me. Somehow, as my career progressed, I felt that I wasn't feeling quite as fulfilled or happy with what I was doing. And I started asking those questions, you know. So while on the one hand, I was dead set on this career path, on the other hand, I was starting to ask questions, well, am I really feeling fulfilled? Am I really passionate about what I'm doing? What is the impact that I'm having? And where do I want to go from here? And those are tough questions, Simon. I'm telling you, not easy. It was years of exploration and reflection and not knowing what to do and where to go with it until I actually came across coaching. I had some career moves in that process, but I came across coaching. I thought, I want to explore this a little bit more. I want to know more about this coaching thing. Hired a coach, got clarity on my own stuff and thought, this is actually what I want to do with people. I want to go back into the corporate environment and help people become more than just that. And when I say just, it's not just, because it is a journey and it is hard work, but there is more to us than being kind of work people who are driven to achieve and so focused on work that we forget other areas of our lives and what else do we want as human beings. So my mission was really focused more on making the workplace a more human workplace where people cared about people and what people think and how they feel at work and how happy they are in their life in general. Because if you look at those aspects, then you are going to actually get better performance out of people and even better results. So for me, it's about combining that. How do you look at a whole person at work who is here to fulfill personal aspirations as well as work aspirations and really create an environment that's doing that for your employees and for yourself?
And how did you actually make the transition? How did you break free, if you like, of that corporate mindset yourself to step out to start your own thing?
Yeah, it's also really a challenging shift. For me, I had to actually do it in a step process. So what I did was I ended my corporate career. I was already on this journey of searching. It took me years to understand. It wasn't obvious to me what my next step would be and what my next career step would look, or my career path would look like. And I actually decided to go into the academic world. So I left corporate, went into academics, lectured at the university in Johannesburg, Wits University, which is the biggest university there, and ran a consulting gig on the side, still doing actuarial work. But I think through my work with people, I started to really feel that element of mentorship. And how do you, for me, it was about creating the next generation of actuaries and really connecting with people, not just teaching them the material, looking beyond, you know, looking at the whole person. And I love that element of my work, but it was still not enough. Then I went on a journey of exploring. I actually took a year off to just explore what I wanted. It was after the birth of my third child. I've got three children, a boy and two girls. So after my baby was born, I had a bit of a health crisis, and it really started demanding or asking of me to not just ask the questions, but to actually say, what do I want to do with it? How do I create a life that combines career aspirations, growth and achievement with meaning and purpose and fulfillment? And that's the journey that I went on. So I took a year of work to explore and see what I could find, came across coaching. And then the first course that I did was like, wow, this is the first time that I'm feeling like I'm really able to bring together those two elements of the driven career aspirations and the who am I and how do I fulfill myself with a sense of purpose and meaning in the work that I do?
Right. Okay. So when you engage with your clients, what are the key pain points that you can see them experiencing that belies that they have a problem that you can help them solve?
Yeah. So there are quite a few pain points. I always say every person is an individual. And we have to remember that. And every person's going to have their own unique set of circumstances. But there are some things that we see repeating themselves over and over again. So what I often see is that when we have a high achiever, you know, someone who's really good at what they do, they're a top performer getting results and they get promoted in their organizations, or they even decide to leave the organizational structure and start their own business because of what they love to do and their area of expertise. And they have to shift their mindset from being someone who's working within a structure to being a leader of a structure. So now your expertise is kind of a foundational basis point for what you're doing, and you need to up level your leadership skills in terms of what it means to run a business, to lead people, to have a greater degree of self-awareness in terms of who you are and how you show up, because that is going to have a huge impact on the work that you do. So I would say that's one of the key pain points, which is that leadership gap, because all of a sudden you understand that you need to learn skills that you've never really needed to use before, and it's not really anything that you've done in the past. So, you know, the expression coined by Marshall Goldsmith, what got you here won't get you there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard that. Yeah. So it's really, really typically that leadership gap that I call the leadership gap, where you now need something new. You need to learn new skills. And it's all about leadership. It's about self-awareness. It's about leading others. It's about resolving conflict. It's about communication, setting a big picture vision. Those are the things that really require you to step up to a new level of leadership, which is not something you were really trained for typically in your journey up until that point.
So what do you feel are the, so do you see that people are experiencing inadequacy? Do you feel people are experiencing imposter syndrome? Are people experiencing just that they don't have the skills that they need? What are the kind of things that they're coming to you and saying, Daphna, I know I need help because these are the things that I'm experiencing. What typically are they?
Yeah. So typically it would be something like, I'm really struggling because I want to achieve a whole lot of things and my people are just not doing what they need to do. I can't rely on them. I can't trust them. Often it boils down to some kind of a people issue, team issue. They don't understand me. They don't understand the vision of the business. They don't take ownership enough. I'm the one who's taking most ownership and everything lands up being on me again. So that's another typical pain point, is understanding where do you step into the detail and when do you step out of the detail and remain in the big picture, and the ability to communicate the big picture to your team so that they can really be with you and support you in the journey. But sometimes there's also a very big gap between where you are in terms of what you want to create and where you want to take your business and what your team understand from you and know how to implement. You know, there's something that needs to be bridging that gap. So that's often a big frustration, is how do I get my team to be more motivated, more engaged, taking more ownership, working faster, working harder, more skillful, you know, and it's often pointed at the team. But I always say, hold on a sec, let's look at you. Let's stop for a moment and say, what do you need to be doing to develop your team so that they can also step into leadership, just like you have had to step into leadership.
Right.
So yeah, that's an important one. I mean, you mentioned self-doubt and imposter syndrome. I think that's also what we typically see. There's, again, with that promotion, I always say imposter syndrome is an indication that you have been called to a level of growth that you haven't experienced yet. So while it's scary and it does mean that you don't feel as confident in your skills and abilities to do what you need to do, it actually is highlighting to you that you've now stepped up your game. You need a new level of something, and you've been called to that, you've been promoted to that, which means people have faith in you and they can see your potential, and sometimes we need to catch up to that. So the positive side of that is know that there is something bigger for you to step up into. That's a challenge, an adventure to go on to. There are people who believe in you. And yes, you're going to have some doubts. You're going to have some lack of confidence around that, but that can be bridged. And it's really a call to greatness, if you want to put it that way.
Right. And I'm fascinated by the kind of interface, if you like, between communication and leadership. And how much strong communication skills play a part in leadership. Okay, do you see that the ability to communicate is a, for want of a better term, like a linchpin in leadership, or is that just one of several skills that a good leader needs to have?
There are several skills for sure, but if you had to, I think almost everything boils down to communication. And I will add to that, it's, for me, it's communication and decision making, because the way I see leadership is that when you're at a level of leadership where you are running a business, you have a team underneath, you have stakeholders all around you, everybody wants a piece of you as the, you know, head of the business, as the leader.
Sure.
The second thing that I link to that is decision making, because everything that crosses a leader's desk is about making a decision at the end of the day. So if you look at combining, the task is decision making, because everything comes to you, you need to channel it somewhere. Often leaders are the bottlenecks for their business because they hold back on decisions for whatever reasons, a whole lot of reasons for that, which we can discuss. But that's the first part. And then the second part is, how do you communicate those decisions? How do you communicate what you want to happen in the business so that your team and your people can actually do what they need to do in order to build what you are wanting to build? And often there's a communication gap, because what we're thinking in our heads is not often that translatable to the people around us. So we might have an idea, it will be clear to us exactly what it looks like, but it does need to be broken down in terms of how you communicate it to your team so that they really understand how they need to break it down into steps that they can action. And often there's a gap there. Leaders don't really communicate their ideas that clearly. And that's just one aspect of it. If you look at building relationships, which is another huge element of leadership, that also, the linchpin to that is communication, because you build a relationship through how you communicate with people, through gaining their trust, through being open and transparent and, you know, sharing things. The more you communicate, the better. And then I'll take that even to crisis situations. When you are leading a crisis or leading change or leading an adversity, the more you communicate, the better, because then you create an environment of safety for your people. Mm-hmm. And what often happens is that leaders tend to actually shut down at those points because they're uncertain. They don't have all the answers. So they say, let me rather say nothing. But the fact is, when you say nothing, you create a vacuum and people create their own stories. And often the stories are going to be way worse and more negative than anything that you can communicate with them. And even if you communicate, I don't know what's going on, but here's what I do know. Here's what I can share. And just keep those channels open for asking questions and talking about things and raising fears and concerns and worries. Because, you know, if you as a leader are concerned about something, I can guarantee you that your people are 100 times more scared about it than you are. So when you're feeling something, it's good to surface it so that you give an opportunity for the people around you to also talk about what's going on. So communication is absolutely, absolutely key in terms of how you run your business and how what kind of a leader you are.
So let's talk about decision making, okay? And it's interesting that in my recruitment business, I deal with an awful a lot of business leaders. And there are some who are very strong and effective decision makers,
right,
where they seek out advice, take in opinions from various stakeholders, then make a decision and stick with it, okay? And there are others that just don't have that ability, where they flip-flop or they will just dither or will kind of oscillate from, okay, well, yeah, we're definitely going to do this. And then someone else will say, oh, no, we should do, okay, no, we're going to do that. And there are others.
Or an email can just sit in the inbox for ages and they just ignore it.
Yeah. Or probably the most frustrating are the ones who they don't listen to any stakeholders until they find one that agrees with their original position. Okay. Where it's like, this is what I think we should do. What do you think? I don't think that. What do you think? I don't think that. What do you think? I don't think that. What do you think? I don't think. What do you think? Oh, I think that. Great. I agree with him. We're going to do that. Right. Yeah. So from your perspective, what is it that makes good decision makers? Okay. What does a good decision maker look like? And if people are poor decision makers, hopefully they are self-aware enough to recognize that they are, and that perhaps there's some damage that's being done to the business as a result of it. What can they do to transform themselves or to make that shift or journey to being better at decision making?
Yeah. So I think to start with your first question, a good decision maker, what does it look like? It looks like someone who's not afraid to make mistakes, because you know the saying that whether you make the wrong decision or the right decision is, it doesn't really matter, but making no decision is really the worst place that you can be, because everybody is standing and waiting for your go ahead in order to be able to continue the journey. Now, whether it's a wrong decision or right decision, you can always fix it and you can always adjust it. And the truth is, you never have all the information you need in order to know that you are making the right decision. The most important thing is to make a decision and enable everyone to move forward. People who are good decision makers, in my opinion, are ones who are not afraid to make mistakes, because what I see with the people that are poorer decision makers, let's say, is that they really are just afraid of making the mistakes. And sometimes the stakes are really, really high and it's scary to make the wrong decision, but you've got to take that leap and you've got to jump ahead, and you can take calculated risks and you can take it in steps as well, but you need to make a decision and not be scared to make a mistake, because a mistake is learning, it's growth, it's understanding how you're going to do it differently next time. It's also setting an example for your people that actually take a risk, take a calculated risk, make a decision. If you make a mistake, we can learn from it. So that's on that side. The poorer decisions, I think.
Let me just jump in. Go ahead. Do you think that often could be the product of the environment as well? So for example, if let's say you're working in an environment where there is blame, that if people make a mistake, then, you know, someone's getting fired, you know, that kind of, that, you know, that kind of environment, it's much harder to have that almost swashbuckling, let's just make a decision and move forward, right? Where, or it could be, okay, the stakes are really high because if we get this wrong, then all of the, perhaps, you know, we're deciding, you know, do we go this way or this way? And it's a real kind of fork in the road where the right decision will lead to success, the wrong decision will lead to failure, and perhaps the failure of the entire business, okay? How does one address that where either the stakes are really high and the wrong decision could be incredibly costly either to the business or to the individual or both?
Yeah. So I think in that case, it's really such a good question because often the stakes are high and often we don't have enough information. So in a case like that, I think it is important to gather as much evidence as you can. Speak to people, trusted advisors, mentors, coaches, help to clarify your thinking and see how you can minimize risk. So if I take an example of a client of mine who recently wanted to launch a new product within their business that was quite revolutionary and different, and in the industry, they hadn't seen such a thing before. And there were a lot of people that were saying, if you go with this product, it's going to fail because there's a lot of education that has to go around it. People don't know such a thing. Our industry is used to it being done a certain way. You're now going to create an innovation in an industry that's not used to innovation. We're going to lose clients and not gain clients. And there's a lot of back and forth and discussion because the upside is, wow, we're going to be innovative. We're going to introduce something to the market that has never been seen before and could take it completely to another level. Or downside is we're going to be rejected as a result of this product and, you know, as you say, detrimental to the business. So what sometimes there's an in-between step. And in this case, they actually decided to start with a pilot program, choose a client that's willing to walk the journey with them, ask them if they'd be interested in testing the product and giving them feedback. And that's how they did a kind of, they didn't launch it and they didn't go all out, but they did a soft launch or a pilot to see how it would work, get feedback and see how they would continue with this product. So I think there's always a way to find how you are going to do something that's a little bit softer that can help you branch into a new area that might feel risky, but yeah, it could actually have a huge upside for the business.
Right. Okay.
So yeah.
Okay.
That's one way.
Right. And beyond that, then, what is it that you, from your perspective, that helps people make that shift from poor decision-making to decision-making?
Yes, I really want to touch on that point because I think that really relates to something super important in leadership, and that is self-awareness. And you mentioned you'd hope that people who are poor decision-makers would know that they're poor decision-makers. Also had a client who was a terrible decision maker, really, really flip-flopped all the time, never made a decision, told one person one thing, another person another thing, with huge confusion. And he actually did a 360. So we had an exercise where everybody presented what they thought their strengths and weaknesses were, and he presented his strength as decision making. Then came a 360 where the reality actually, you know, was there in black and white for him to see that people regarded him as a poor decision maker. And there was a real shift that had to happen for him in terms of understanding, actually, not that it's not a strength, it's actually a weakness. And this is, okay, maybe a little bit of an extreme case, but we don't always have that self-awareness. And I think that is key. How do you gain self-awareness first and foremost in any area of leadership? To make sure that you understand what your blind spots are. For him, decision-making was a huge blind spot, and it's something he needed to shine the light on and really work with. So get feedback from the people around you. Ask them genuinely, are you a good decision-maker? Are you a poor decision-maker? Do you really know the level of where you stand on that scale of decision making? Because we know it's a continuum. It's not like you're either good or bad. You could be somewhere in the middle. Maybe there's some areas where you're better at making decisions, and often it's your area of expertise or where you have all the information that you need, then it's easier to make a decision. But when you're feeling more uncertain, it's more difficult to make a decision. And then it's really working on it within yourself. Once you're aware of it, then you know you need to step that up. I want to add another element to that, something that holds back generally people who are poor decision makers is also the inability to delegate. So this is where a whole lot of stuff piles up on your desk because you believe you need to make the decision on each of those things that has come up. And actually, you can delegate some of your decision making as well. And that was also an eye-opening moment for another leader that I was working with, where she took everything on. She was overwhelmed. Everything had to cross her desk and she had to kind of give the okay for almost everything. And when you started looking at that and saying, well, how can you empower your team to actually make some of those decisions, decide on the level where actually it's okay for my team to make a decision rather than me holding on to everything. And that opened up her ability to be more decisive because her poor decision-making skills came from just overwhelm and inability to delegate, so kind of taking everything on.
Right. Okay. Wow. That's amazing. I think the hardest thing I think for most people I would imagine is that self awareness, knowing where their strengths and weaknesses are. And I think what makes it additionally challenging, particularly for leaders, is if you are the leader of a company, going to the people who report to you, to your subordinates, even maybe even to peers, but particularly to subordinates, and asking them for that kind of
feedback,
360 feedback, it can often be incredibly difficult. And so how do you cultivate a culture where people are able to speak uncomfortable truths to power?
So also, critical question in terms of building the culture and how you're going to be as a leader and what your business is going to look like. But I think that firstly, feedback, I want to say, is a skill, and there's skill in both giving feedback and receiving feedback. So we often think we need to know how to give feedback and have those hard conversations, but we also need to know how to receive feedback. And therein lies the kind of magic, if you want, recipe for how you create that open, transparent culture where people can have difficult conversations. Because if you're receiving feedback in a really negative way and there's consequences, so say you're the manager and someone's told you, you know, given you a piece of feedback about your management style or something that you do that can be destructive or detract from progress or whatever it is, and you lash out and you get defensive and you don't want to listen, and the next time in a meeting you'll cut the person off because of the time that he gave you that feedback, that's a sure way to end all openness and transparency in your organization. So how you receive the feedback and how you encourage people to be open about it and take feedback as a learning opportunity and actually as a gift. Feedback is a gift because there are a lot of things we can't see in ourselves. And when someone takes the time to have that courageous conversation with you about something that they're seeing about you that you might not be aware of, they are giving you the gift of being able to see something and improve it and grow from it. So creating a culture of openness is starting to have those conversations, give feedback in a way that is non-threatening and receive it in a way that is non-threatening. And that it's got to be an ongoing process. Often what we see in organizations is that feedback is given at certain times of the year, usually where there's a performance appraisal or a review or time for bonuses or increases. And then you sit down and have this big feedback conversation about what's working well and what needs to be improved. And that typically happens twice a year. Again, that's a very specific time. It's for a very specific purpose. And it's like the conversation that everybody dreads. And it's tough. It's tough to hear things that are not working so well. But if you get into an environment and a culture where when something is right, you address it, you know, feedback is both positive and negative. So you've got to be fair in both. So when something is right, you point that out in the moment. When something didn't work, you take the time to address it at that time. Again, there's things around it. So you've got to do it with sensitivity and definitely never give someone critical feedback in a group of people and pull them aside. And, you know, there's a lot to it. But if you can do it in the moment, if it's something that is just part of your culture and part of the conversations you're having anyway, and it's not this twice a year event that has to happen, you start building the culture of openness, transparency, difficult conversations that are actually there to help you grow.
Right. Okay. And then just to kind of like in, sort of round this out a little bit, when you have helped your clients, what sort of shift are they seeing in themselves and in their business?
Yeah. So the shifts are amazing, because if we look at feedback, is when I talk about leadership and I work with my clients, they might come with a specific question or situation that they would like resolved, or they'd like to change, or they'd like to see happening differently. But we work on an inside out approach. So it really starts with you, how you show up as a leader. What are the behaviors that serve you and actually really show your greatness? And what are the behaviors that hold you back and detract from what you're trying to achieve? So we've got to look at that internal journey. And when we look at that and we work on ourselves as we're trying to achieve whatever it is that we want to achieve in our business, and together with the impact that we want to have on our people. So I do say it's kind of a three-pronged thing: identity, who am I? Impact, how do I want to impact my environment, my people, my stakeholders, my colleagues, suppliers, it applies to everyone around you. And thirdly is business. How do I want my business to grow and see the results that I want to see? When you take a look at that and you start with yourself, you'll start to see that people notice the differences in behavior. And I have had quite a few clients that, you know, when they're open about their coaching and they are open about the fact that they're working on themselves and that they're working with a coach that they want to make change in their business, people come back to them with feedback about improvement as well, which is hugely encouraging. And it's lovely to see the growth. So again, an example of someone I've been working with for a number of years, we've got quite a close relationship, and you know, they invited me to their end of year party. And there I met some of the colleagues and their direct reports and all of that. And people came up to me and said, you know, well done. We've seen the change in our boss. And we're just so happy that, yeah. And yeah, when you can make those changes, you do shift the culture and people start to interact with you differently. And they want to learn from you and they want to be led by you. And then your business results change as well. And there's a, you know, there's a whole, it's like that, you know, pebble in the water. There's a ripple effect, because you change something from the inside, and slowly, slowly we see the effect on that, on your people and on your business and performance and results.
That's great. So what three tips would you give to somebody that wanted to make that shift from being a high performer to a genuine leader?
Yeah. So I would say, I'm going back to self-awareness, which we've discussed, and feedback. I think that's a critical tip. Understand yourself better. Understand the things that you do really, really well, because those are the things that you want to develop and focus on more and grow. And understand the things that are holding you back, because you really want to try and compensate for that or just avoid it as much as you can. We really go with an approach of work on what you do really, really well. Work on the zone of genius so that you can really show up in your full potential. So self-awareness and understanding yourself so you can be more of your best self at work. So that would be one. The second would be all about relationship building. Understand that a business is about people. And when you're working with people, key to that is relationships. How do you build relationships with the people around you? And I think it's got to be also beyond work. I think you have to know your people and manage your relationships beyond who they are at work. And I think that goes back to a little bit of my experience in the corporate environment, which I found incredibly frustrating, that was also work focused, that there wasn't an interest in who am I as a person, what do I want, and how does that align with the business objectives. So I would say, get to know your people, build those relationships, build relationships outside of your work as well, build your networks, because everything is about relationships in the end. So I would say that's my second tip. And my third tip, I think, would be balancing the macro with a micro, big picture and detail. I think it's really important for a leader to understand that your role is to build the vision and guide people to help you make it a reality. And that need to let go and not hold control over every element and every aspect, and that macro management of all the details going around you. You need to trust your people, empower them. You're building leaders in your business. Empower them to make decisions, to do what they need to do, so that they help you build the business and help you become leaders themselves. And then you really will get the best results. And I think that letting go is a challenge. So work on that, and that kind of balance between, you need to know what's going on, you don't need to delve into the detail, and you need to be that creative mind who leads people towards the vision that you want to create.
That's great. So Daphna, what's next for you and for your practice?
Yeah, interesting. I think that I'm in a phase of growth in terms of, I've got a team of coaches that we work on projects, and we love that. We love going into a project and working throughout a business. So I think that's where I'm focusing on the growth of my business, really taking on projects where, you know, we can access more people and give them coaching. I'm working with someone actually on an app that using AI can bring coaching and make it more accessible to more junior levels in the organization as well. So we have the different layers. I think, you know, I don't think, I could be wrong, but I don't think AI is going to replace the people interaction, but I think it can do a lot. So coaching is really valuable because it's something that helps people think better, think more clearly, get clarity, get support and guidance. And often it's really reserved for the more senior levels of the organization because of budgetary constraints or whatever the case may be. So bringing in an app that can take care of some of that and offer a coaching alternative for more junior layers or levels of the business is something that's quite exciting for me. So that's an area of growth that I'm looking at in terms of my own business.
Great stuff. Fantastic. And if people wanted to reach you, learn more about you and potentially work with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
So definitely, you know, I'm on LinkedIn, which I think is a really great platform to connect and just see a little bit about me. I've got my website, which is daphnahorovitz.com, and there's a lot of resources and information there. There's a free sample of my, I've got the two books. So there's a free sample of each of the books that you can go and download there and see if, you know, any of that is exciting for you. And as I say, lots of resources, quizzes and all sorts of things. So go check out the website and yeah, just reach out, ask me questions, and yeah, I love interacting and engaging and connecting.
Great stuff. And I'll make sure that the links to your website and to your LinkedIn profile and of course to your podcast are included.
Yes, the podcast in
the links below. Daphna, this has been an absolute joy. I've learned so much about leadership, about decision making, about self-awareness. I mean, I thought I was self-aware, but I'm not too sure now. and it's been an absolute pleasure having you. So Daphna Horovitz, thank you so much for joining us
here
in the conference room.
Thank you so much, Simon. It's been a pleasure from me as well.
Coming up next week on the conference room, I'll be talking to CEO of Swoop Business Solutions and fintech industry expert, George Sayuni.
Well, at the end of the day, yeah, as CEO, the buck stops with you. But I think finding those key leaders, you know, where you're only managing, call it 6 to 8 key individuals or channels or departments, that is key to being successful. A lot of times being overextended and kind of being a general manager, if you will, of the operation versus a CEO, that's kind of where you get stuck into getting pulled into the business instead of staying on the business. So, you know, making sure that you're delegating. Delegation is key, and you're delegating to the right leadership.
Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch, drop us a line in the comments section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.